to From Believing to Being, a podcast about pursuing meaningful spirituality after faith deconstruction. We're your hosts.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Dave.
We're two former evangelicals having an ongoing conversation about what life and spirituality look like after letting go of our religious beliefs. Join us as we discuss deconstruction, Christianity, mysticism, enlightenment, and consciousness, and most importantly, how to experience this new way of being in the midst of parenting, careers, and going about our everyday lives.
If you've recently left your faith or simply feeling pulled into a deeper way of being, we hope this podcast will encourage and inspire you and really just reassure you that you're not alone on this journey. Welcome back to the second iteration here of Karen and Dave getting together and just having some dialogue around fun. Well, maybe not fun, but deep and heavy and topics that we're really interested about. So, you know, just a quick recap of last time was our kind of introductory conversation just about our backgrounds and some of the big spiritual shifts that we've had from deconstruction outside of the traditional Christian evangelical faith to now something that I don't know that we would either be able to really well define where we are, but that's part of the fun of it. So today we, going off of our conversation from last time, we ended on this note of identity. As we dive in deeper to spirituality, we have this question that typically comes up is, who am I? And we didn't have the time to finish up that conversation last time. So here we are now asking, you know, really that question, who am I? And really just exploring all the different iterations of it and all the different ways we could go with it. So I'm definitely looking forward to talking more about this with you, Karen.
This episode, this topic, I am so excited to talk about it. I have been thinking about it all week, and it's one of those things. I mean, through the whole deconstruction of one's faith, there's a lot of really hard moments. There can be really dark moments. It can be very lonely. And at points, you can go into this feeling of meaninglessness. Like, you know, once I've said goodbye to God and left my religion and sometimes my community, you know, where do I find my hope and where do I find my happiness? Once I really started feeling the freedom to dig deep into this question of who am I and kind of stumbled into this identity of more of an essence, gosh, it was like something lit up inside of me and I felt like it has brought me so much joy and peace. And so I'm really excited to talk about this question because I hope that we can give other people hope that once they dig more into this, they can recover some of that sense of belonging and meaning that they felt that maybe they had lost.
Yeah, that's good. And so just to recap a little bit more from last week, tell me again how your identity became a struggle as part of your deconstruction, right? As part of your deconstruction out of evangelicalism. Yeah. How did your identity play into that?
I had always been a very spiritual kid. I was raised, well, for the first about 10 years of my life, we went to a Catholic church. I don't know. I was really intrigued by the spiritual world. I remember, it's so dumb to think about it now, but I took my allowance and went down the street one Saturday when I think I was about maybe like 7 or 8. And I went down the street to this yard sale and I bought this really high-backed, ugly green, like faux leather chair. And I brought it into my room. I mean, it looked like a throne, right? I brought it into my room and I would pretend that it held the spirit of God. Like I would imagine Jesus sitting in the chair. Yes. And I would,
awesome.
I would kneel at the, you know, in front of the chair. Mm. And that was where I prayed. I mean, I was always interested in spirituality.
And I'm sorry, you were said you were 7 at the time?
I was like seven or eight.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, you know, writing poems about God and things like that. And then when I got saved at a Calvary Chapel, like Awana's event with a friend of mine, that was when I found Jesus. Right. And so, gosh, I just dove in headfirst into Christianity. We kind of moved away from Catholicism at that point. And so I was going to this Calvary Chapel church, and then I went to a Southern Baptist church. And, you know, I was that girl in high school who was president of the Bible club, leading Bible studies and teaching, you know, preschoolers in Sunday school. And I was at church all the time, going to Tuesday night visitation, either working during a service or being in a service for like four to five hours on Sunday. Then in college, I was in InterVarsity. You know, my whole childhood was just immersed in this spiritual space. And, you know, I think of the core of my spiritual childhood as being largely Southern Baptist. Then, you know, I always identified as Christian, always. That was how I made friendships. That was how I chose the people most of the time that I dated. That just underpinned every single thing in my entire life. So when I hit that period of deconstructing in winter of 2019, and I walked away from God and from the Bible and left Jesus and all of that, I really had no idea who I was without my faith. I didn't know how to talk to my kids. I wasn't sure if I was going to be a nice person, which looking back now just, you know, indicates all sorts of problems with it. But I really had no idea who I would be without this foundation of faith. It just, I remember sitting in the hot tub with my husband one night, crying and telling him, who he's an atheist, but I was telling him, I don't know who I am if I'm not a Christian. So it really just felt like the foundation of who I was had been pulled out from underneath me.
Yeah, that's heavy. Unfortunately, that's not an uncommon story. For me, I can't sit there and say it was this progressively growing Christian person identity, but it definitely became a significant part of my life. I'll say that in my, you know, mid to late 20s. And same as you, you know, I found that belonging significantly in my church through service, through finding community and strong arming groups into happening, because it's just always been, I've needed it, right? I've needed that community. Like, that's what I love about us being able to connect and talk about these things, because it's just so, so helpful to be able to just talk about it rather than talk to ourselves. Not that journaling or anything like that is not helpful, but sometimes you just gotta follow the breadcrumbs as we've talked about and find those people that they're going to be there to be able to have these kind of conversations. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely changes significant. And I think identity is a big, big, big part of Christianity, right? You know, it's kind of a team thing. Like, you're on the Christian team, and it is the most important part of who you are. And yeah, so to then lose that causes, I can see that, to cause it all to just unravel.
It's interesting, because now that I've stepped away from the Christian community and the evangelical community, I find it fascinating how it does have that that team dynamic that I was unable to see when I was in it. And because when you're in it, you're thinking, well, we're one big, happy Christian family. I want to support the people who value the same things that I value. And I know as an attorney, I would have people come to me and say, I contacted you because I heard that you were a Christian. And I'm thinking, me being a Christian has nothing to do with the services that I can provide for you. I mean, any attorneys can do what I'm doing, and other attorneys could probably do a better job than I'm doing. So thank you for coming to see me. But it felt really weird to know to know that people were choosing me because of my faith. But then I know that I would do the same thing sometimes, that whenever I heard someone else was a Christian, I would feel this connection with them. Like, oh, okay, we believe the same things. And that's kind of what it was. That sort of is the party line that you're fed, right? You hear all these great stories about Christians being imprisoned, and they would write one half of the Jesus fish, and then someone else from another cell would come and would complete the fish, and they would know that they were Christians. And so we were always taught that there was this spiritual bond that we would have between one another. But it's funny because I didn't see how that could be a negative thing and kind of a toxic thing until I stepped back and was able to look at it from the outside and see just how ridiculous it was that we were using each other in this sense, especially because a lot of times, just because someone says they're Christian doesn't actually mean that they're a good person, or it doesn't mean that they have good business practices or anything, you know, anything like that. But the belonging because of the right belief was huge. And so you pin all of your identity on the right belief. And when you walk away from that belief, then it all just crashes down.
It's funny. I just had this thing happen today. I was going through some of a room that we don't really go into much. It's kind of just a, for lack of a different term, it's kind of a junk room. We just kind of keep various things in there. And I saw this old picture frame, and it was a pretty overtly Christian picture frame. And I remember buying it with the thought of exactly what we're talking about, that I wanted to be able to be at work and let people know what team I was on. And I would have never said it like that, but in hindsight, that's right. What it was. Because, and it was a little, two things. It was one, it was accountability. And then, because I was like, well, I'm a good Christian man, and I want people to know that, so that they look at me and that's what they see. And I have to embody that, which I think that's a healthier part of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember a guy, I'll never forget this. It was, I don't know, I think my second job out of college. A guy, when I was like leaving the job, he's like, I'm really disappointed to be losing you. I really saw you as one of the lights in this office. And in hindsight, I knew 100% it was because I was known to be a Christian guy. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm almost sure that if I wouldn't have been a Christian, he wouldn't have said that about me, right? Not that I'm like a toxic presence at work or anything, but that was the reason. It wasn't to do with who I was or how I was behaving. It was because of the most important thing, what team I was on. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting. Mm-hmm. Again, I like what you said about, you know, now looking from the outside in, you can see that key identification for so many people. I mean, let's be clear here. Like, this is not a Christian podcast. you know, we don't really even want to talk about this too much, but I guess the more that we think about this, it comes up because it's our foundation, and understanding that, you know, we live in the US with a significant part of the spiritual, I guess, undergirding of this country is Christian. So it's really important to understand that, even if it's not necessarily what we want to talk about, but that, yeah, that identity that is undergirded in Christianity is so heavy.
Mm-hmm. It's been helpful for me to recognize how much of it is about the belonging, that because in Christianity, we focus so much on Jesus and God and the Bible and all that kind of thing. But I really think that most of the time, what keeps people there is the sense of belonging. And it's interesting to me whenever you get into some of the deconstruction communities and you hear people talk about what they are most sad about or what they miss the most. And the things that I've seen are the music and the community, their friends. And for some people, you know, for some people, their family, because, you know, it's very interwoven. But it's funny to me that very few people talk about missing God or missing the Bible. It's all about the community that was created. I think that moving into the deconstruction space, one of the hardest things about it is when you lose that community, you don't fit in with anybody. And I think that's one of the reasons why people tend to either enter into atheism really quickly or find another denomination of Christianity that aligns a little bit better with their belief. Because sitting in that messy middle, when you're not quite sure that you're agnostic because you just, you know, let go of this belief in God, but then you're not quite sure you're atheist because something in you is still sort of niggling a little bit, like, well, why are we here? What, you know, what is this all about? But then you don't actually fit into the Christian communities that you used to be part of. That's a really hard space to be in. And I think it takes extra courage to be willing to sit in that space where you don't belong anywhere. Yeah. And I know that's definitely where I found myself not belonging anywhere. And it was hard. It was really hard at times.
And I think that is a really good segue into further exploring this question of who I am, because that's where it leads you, right? Is that liminal mm-hmm. space leads you there. But I want to pause real quick for purposes of, you know, you use the word deconstruction a lot there. I know that we used it in the last episode, but I'm actually not sure if we really clearly defined it. And not that it has a clear definition, but I guess I'll just define it as far as I see it, because let's face it, there might be some of y'all listening out there that are less familiar with it. Unlikely, let's face it, because it's a pretty hot topic, but there might be some out there less familiar with the term. So I'll just state a high level definition, and Karen fill in any blanks if I miss it, but really it's especially in the Christian space, predominantly evangelical Christianity, it is really a movement that is defined by this word deconstruction, where people are really calling into question more what it is that they've been told about their faith, and really kind of turning away from it in a big way. It's different for everybody, but that's when we're talking about deconstruction. That's kind of what we're referring to is that questioning of what we were told about specifically evangelical Christianity and some of the things that we've realized about it and really that turning away, I think is how I see it. At least that, I think that turning away is pretty significant because it's kind of beyond just like a quote doubt and more making an active decision to start to seek outside of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone told me, because I didn't know about it for a long time, someone told me that there's also a philosophy or a literature term of deconstruction. And I think that this phrase is sort of borrowed from that. But yeah, if you want to get super technical, there are some differences. But yeah, I think of it in terms of taking things apart. Like someone... Mm-hmm. Kathy Escobar, I think she referred to it as Jenga faith. So if you imagine your faith, you know, all the little blocks, and then when you deconstruct, you're taking out little pieces, like, you know what, I'm not going to believe in hell anymore. Like, I don't really think that, you know, people in the LGBTQ plus community can't be saved. I'm going to take that piece out. Or I don't believe that that women shouldn't be pastors. I'm going to take that piece out. So you keep letting go of all of these beliefs. And for a lot of people, the whole thing just comes crashing down.
So
all of your beliefs and that's the point where you walk away. You're like, okay, well, I guess there's nothing left that I want to believe in anymore. Other people, I think, keep their tower, and some people just take out one belief, you're like, well, I'm not going to believe in hell anymore. And then they plug in, I'm going to go with universalism, or, you know, I'm not going to believe that women can't be pastors, so I'm going to go to a really liberal Presbyterian church or Episcopalian church where women can be pastors. So I think there is some, there are some in the deconstruction space that are moving pieces around, but it does seem like the current trend is that people are either just knocking the whole thing over or pulling out pieces and then finding that it all collapses. I was searching after my whole faith thing fell apart, because I had been kind of a little bit on the outskirts of the online evangelical community for a while. And so when my faith started falling apart, I was Googling, you know, like losing my faith in God and all this kind of stuff for months. And then I stumbled upon the term deconstruction, and this whole world opened up to me. It was such a relief. So I don't know if there's anybody out there listening who hasn't heard of the term deconstruction, but is having major doubts about their faith or feels like they're losing their faith in God, Google faith deconstruction. Yeah. And the whole world will open up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Or reach out to us, because I know both Karen and I love to talk about people, love to talk about this with people, and many out there do, because it's like we've gone through it. We know we're still going through it in many ways, but we know some of the pitfalls, some of the challenges, of which obviously we'll talk about in this podcast. And one thing that's arising as we're talking about this is in the sense of belonging, something that my wife has pointed out to me that she's noticed in the deconstruction community, because there is a good sense of belonging. I will say that it really helps me a lot to know I'm not alone. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel for people before the internet, because I have to,
oh my gosh,
the same questions and concerns and doubts and disbelief all happened, but it wasn't nearly as easy to find people to be on your team, to go back to the team. Mm. But it's important. It's important to have that. But again, something that my wife pointed out that's kind of challenging about it is you become united in what you're against versus what you're for. And that is not solid ground. So it's like, to go back to the Jenga analogy, which I think is excellent. I think about my own journey, and it's exactly that. Oh, God's not a loving God wouldn't send people to hell. Okay. A God that is so, so big, as Christianity tends to think, would probably have some level of governorship over everyone, not just Christianity. You know, it would transcend. Anyway, those are my big ones. And then everything kind of fell apart when I pulled those Jenga blocks out. But anyway, so to continue that, it's like you have this Jenga game and everything collapses. And then like, there isn't a foundation to build up that community. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Then there has to be something. Otherwise you're going to have an unstable community. So there needs to be something to then build from. And I think that's another, you know, great question to be exploring together, is, you know, what does that become, right? Is it just a bunch of offshoots of different, like you said, atheism or universalism, or, you know, the kind of spirituality that we're drawn to here? But I think that's an important question to keep calling back to, is like, what are we united in here as a deconstruction community versus, you know, what are we united in that we're against, if that makes sense?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I struggled with a little bit within the deconstruction community is, like I said before, a lot of people, they shed their religious identity, their faith identity, and then they stop. And then their platform, like you said, their sense of belonging comes from attacking others who are still in that space,
right,
with the religious identity that they just left. And I totally get the sense of anger and frustration and grief that comes after deconstruction, there does need to be a space for people to express that. But to me, I think I kind of had this thing for a while, and now I think I'm a bit more humble, but I felt for a long time that if you stopped with your religious, if you stopped with just shedding your religious identity, you didn't go far enough. And I think that is where you and I sort of were able to connect, is because we kept going. And the thing is, I think everyone is somewhere on this awakening spectrum, right? And I definitely think that deconstructing your religious faith is part of that awakening process. I just had this thought today and I thought it was really brilliant, so I'll share. I was thinking about how, you know, if we're all on this journey of awakening to our true nature, or experiencing God, or however you want to put it, that every time you shed an identity of some sort, it sort of is like an alarm, your alarm going off in the morning. And for some people, shedding your religious identity is the first alarm that goes off at 5 a.m. where you kind of wake up and you reach over and you hit snooze. It woke you up, but there's still more to come. It's not a full stepping into everything that is possible. For others, this sort of shedding of a religious identity can actually come and be the very last thing, and be like the ultimate alarm, waking you up and like, boom, you're up out of bed, you're moving forward, you're going on with life. Other people have to hit the snooze button multiple times over the course of their life before it really starts to kick in, like, okay, something else is happening here. I see the temptation to stop at shedding the religious identity because it is such a massive part of who we are. But I like where we're going with this topic today of who am I, because we're so much more than our religious identity. I feel like it's such a shame if people don't know that there is so much more to be explored, that there is so much more of a journey to be had. And I know when I reached out to a good friend and told him that I was, you know, that I had been kicked into deconstruction, and I had just let go of everything that I believed about God, my friend said, "Congratulations, you're in a really good space." It felt very bizarre, but now I'm so glad that he said that. And I'm so glad that he encouraged me to keep going, because this journey has turned out to be so incredible and deep and meaningful and joyful and filled with peace and hard, but really spectacular. And my hope is that everyone would be encouraged to continue moving forward and not to get stuck in that space where they've joined a new team of being against what they had previously been for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To offer up one more criticism, because what I'm getting from what you're saying is the church has such a glorification of that identity that not only does it lock people in, but then once people shed that, it kind of locks them out of feeling encouraged to keep going, if that makes sense. Like what you're saying, that you're so blessed by somebody telling you, keep going. This is not the end of the road. And you know, I think that there can be that temptation in our culture, hegemony. I think it's hegemony is the word I've heard used, where it's a culture that is so saturated with Christianity. The undercurrent to me says you're either a Christian or you're an atheist. Right. It's either that. And that couldn't be further from the truth, as you and I well know. but we've gone through it, right? I mean, we've been in that space where we thought that, right? I mean, a lot of Christians think that you're either on the right team or you're not. You're either in or you're out. There is no gray in faith and spirituality. So yeah, that's my, like, I guess, final criticism there of the church, before we can then kind of move on and talk more about what is good. What are we drawn to? Is that, like, man, they're so rigid that not only are they locking people in, but they're continuing to lock people in even after they're out, because then once they're out, they still have some level of blinders on, I guess, is another analogy to use.
It was something that you said reminded me of. There's a video, I don't know if it's still on Netflix. What is it called? It's called My Teacher, the Octopus, or something.
My Octopus Teacher. Yep.
Octopus Teacher. Yes. Yep. And there is this amazing scene where, so it's this guy who is a free diver, and he's going through a rough time in life, but he has this amazing home by the ocean, like off of Ireland or something, England or something like that. Anyway, he has this house by the ocean. And so he committed to, like, every day he was going to go out and swim. And as part of his free diving, he encounters this reef and this octopus and develops a relationship with an octopus. So then he starts filming the octopus over the course of a year and just gets this incredible videography of this octopus. And he records this one scene where the octopus is, you know, just doing its octopus thing. And then, what is it? A shark or something is coming, or an eel maybe, something is coming to attack the octopus. And the octopus goes down to the ocean floor and with his tentacles grabs all of these shells and grabs the shells and wraps himself up in all of these shells. And not only is he camouflaged, but he's protected from the thing trying to bite him. Deconstruction is like being out there totally naked after you had been covered up and protected by all of these beliefs and all of this, you know, this community of belonging. When you let all of that go and you shed all of those beliefs, you're like the octopus who's out there in the ocean, like, you know, going around naked and vulnerable. And I think that the tendency is we don't like that feeling. And so then we latch onto these other things that will give us a new sense of identity. And we cover ourselves back up again to be protected from that sense of vulnerability. And so I think that a lot of people, when they come out of the church, it's very natural to then be like, well, I need to belong somewhere. So I'm going to reach out and I'm going to grab onto this community and I am going to go join the social justice community, because now I can go out there and I can march in the parades and I can protest and I can, you know, I can advocate for these people that I had once been unkind to or cruel to or thought were wrong. And so I'm going to go join the social justice community and I'm going to put on the identity of being a social justice advocate, or I'm going to put on the identity of an atheist. What I've been learning, and I think what you've been learning too, is, and getting to the real core of our question of who am I, is you've got to let go of all the identities. You've got to be willing and have the courage to not cling to anything new. And I feel a little bit like that's even a danger of uniting around what we're for, or even trying to, I don't know. Cause I think, are we just going to repeat the same thing of, like, we all, you know, we join together and we become for something and then we make some little offshoots and then we exclude others, you know, or would we just be repeating it with a different set of beliefs? So now the space that I'm in, getting to this question of who am I am in a space where I'm trying really hard, like making a really conscious effort to identify everything that I have relied upon as an identity or as a source of my identity and let it go. really be willing to let it go and to walk away from it and not cling to it for protection or a sense of security and belonging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how uncomfortable that can be, and yet how liberating, right? To let go of those things, because paradoxically, it does seem the more that we let go of these constructs of identity, the more that we start to find what is underneath, right?
Yes.
And the power of that which is underneath is what keeps us in this place, I think, right? Of still aspiring to a spirituality, of a faith, of whatever word we want to use for it. Because, you know, you and I agree that the exclusivity, the rigidity of most Christianity isn't really for us. And yet we, speaking for myself, but I think you'd probably agree that we understand that, like, what Christianity is pointing at is it, right? It is what we are finding by doing what you're doing, by going through what you're talking about, is the more that we let go of these constructs of who we think we are, the more we start to see and understand some of the things that are really maybe more deeply rooted in this Christian or other religious spiritual traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we think about every identity that we have as like putting on a pair of sunglasses, you know, you put on the pair of sunglasses as a Christian, and then I put on the pair of sunglasses as an attorney, and I put on the pair of sunglasses as a mom and as a wife and as a white woman, you know, and as an American at some point. But you really can't see things as they are, because your sunglasses, I mean, one, you know, your head is like a foot, you know, sticking out a foot because you've got all these sunglasses on, but everything out in the world is going to be filtered through dozens of these lenses. And as you start taking them off, your world opens up more. If you take off the lens of Christianity, all of a sudden, you know, you can have conversations with people who you never would have thought about having conversations with before, read books, watch movies, listen to music that you never would have done probably as a Christian. So you take that off. And, you know, if you take off the lens of being white, then all of a sudden you're able to kind of have a new perspective and be able to really open yourself up to listen to experiences of other people. If you, you know, just the more identities that you're able to shed, the clearer your vision is naturally going to be. And I think the tricky thing about that too is also that the weirder you're going to look to everybody else, because everyone else is still walking around with all of these sunglasses on. And before, you look just the same as they did. And now that you've shed a bunch of your identities and you've taken off all of your sunglasses, you know, you're no longer perceiving things the same, and you're also no longer being perceived in the same way.
Yeah, it's really good. It's almost like every iteration of sunglasses is, to add to the analogy, I guess, they're also like, there's some level of blinders on each sunglass. Some level of like distortions on each glass. So every pair of glasses that you put on further distorts your view of what is actually transpiring right now, right here in this time and space. And every time you take that pair off, you're clarifying a little bit the lens in which you see the world. That's actually something that I would say a lot earlier on in my deconstruction journey. I don't know that I say it as much anymore, that the lens in which I see the world has changed. So my deconstruction was defined as that. Like, I used to see the world as like this super being, AKA God, created the world, and we are to be devoted to this God. Him, of course, we are to be devoted to him because of his goodness and his mercy and his power and omnipotence and all these characteristics of God. And that was the lens in which I saw the world. And then once the Jenga blocks fell and I stopped seeing the world in that lens, it was like, oh, huh. Well, I see the world differently now. And it's, you know, not to get dogmatic here and say, oh, well, we know what is true and what is not, but it does get the feeling that what we are seeing now, by taking off that pair of glasses is a little bit more clear, a little bit more in touch with the world around us, and a little bit more, I think it's almost like another element that happens is a little bit more peace, maybe not right away, but a little more peace about our interaction with the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So as you think about this question, I do want to get a little bit more weird, if you don't mind, because, you know, that's something that, you know, I've really cherished in getting to know you more is the more esoteric kind of out there philosophy. We can really go there with this question, because something that was arising is like, when you ask the question, who am I? Like, well, when do you stop? You know, at what point do you stop? And so I'm going to throw out the buzzword enlightenment. And I know that, like, that could mean so many different things to so many different people. And I think it can be a huge trap to anyone that says, I want to become enlightened. But at the same time, like, what is perceived as sitting underneath enlightenment, or the essence of enlightenment, I'll say that, is peace, is happiness, mm-hmm. is what we seek. So it's like, we do kind of seek enlightenment, but I don't know that it's kind of paradoxical, because like the seeking of enlightenment can kind of be going down the wrong path. But anyway, I digress. But when you think of through the lens of like enlightenment and that kind of more esoteric spiritual philosophy, how do you think of this question differently in terms of who am I, who we are?
So the first thing that is coming to mind is this moment I had when I was doing a Facebook live or like an Instagram live. I don't know. I had something on my mind and I wanted to share it. And so I had this thought about, is the Bible God's obituary? Because someone close to me had died and I had read her obituary and I had heard her kids, it's like a grandmother figure. I had heard her kids speak at her funeral. And I kept having this sense of like, that's not who she was. And so it started this chain of thought of, is the Bible God's obituary, in the sense that just like whenever you read someone's obituary, you know, they tell you stupid things like, oh, this person was born in this city and they played trumpet when they were a kid and they went to this high school and worked at this job. And you get at the end and you feel like, this tells me nothing about the person. Like I have no idea what it was actually like to be around this person. Some obituaries are better than others. But I was thinking, the Bible is kind of like that. That, and this was not somewhat early on in my deconstruction, but I was still processing a lot of stuff. And I was thinking, we read, you know, you can read the entire Bible and it tells you what God did and who he liked and who he didn't like. But at the end, you're still left with this feeling of like, I still don't know what this is. And Jesus was supposed to be that thing. Jesus was supposed to be the experience of God, right? Okay, so long story. I'm getting to my point. As I was sharing this on this Facebook Live, I was talking about, you know, obituaries and whatever. And I had this almost sort of like a moment of enlightenment where I thought, this is who I am. Like I am an experience. I am not a mind and I am not a body. I am an experience and an essence. And my dad died when I was 25. And afterwards, I was trying to remember different things about him. But I thought, how can you describe what it is like to be in the presence of someone? And, you know, we do it with our kids. We do it with our friends. We're like, oh, he's so funny. He's so goofy. Oh, you would love him. You just have to meet him. And that's when I did have this moment of enlightenment around this question, that and it was the first thing that really opened me up to more of the consciousness enlightenment, like, you know, that sort of world, is I had that moment where I thought, I am an experience. I cannot be defined, and the essence of who I am cannot be described. That was sort of like a little enlightenment moment that I had that spurred me on to think, that's really interesting. I never would have said that about myself before, but I is like, I knew in that moment, I am undefinable. Every person is undefinable. Every person is indescribable. You just have to meet them. I don't know if that answered your question or not. that's where I went.
No, that's good. And I want to make sure that we're going there. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is such a big question where we can talk about identity and, you know, the whole, I guess, philosophy or whatever of identity politics, where there are, you know, people on both sides that really focus on the identity of their base and prop it up. And so we could talk about that all we want. We could talk about Christian identity, country identity, and then we could talk about human identity. We could talk about body, like this body that I am. The words that are coming out of my mouth in this conversation is coming from my body. The thoughts are coming from my mind, but it's my mind, right? It's my body. So who is that? Right. Mm-hmm. And so that is the kind of stuff that I love. It's like, so I do agree that, you know, to go back to the sunglasses analogy, it's important, right? You can't just, I just had this picture come into my head of like just ripping off all the sunglasses at once. It's like, you can't really do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously. That's when the people go crazy. Like, oh my God, the light.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to take them off gradually. And I'll say this, you don't have to take them off, right? It is an unfolding process that will happen. Mm-hmm. It's not by a matter of will. But anyway, so I just wanted to go there, because I think that's where my passion lies, is further exploring that this question of who am I? When I say I...
Yeah. Who do you mean?
Who is that? You know, yeah. Who is that? Cause it's okay. And I love the process of negation. And so sometimes I'll go on walks and I'll just like, think about this stuff. I'll just be like, okay, well, my name is Dave. I'm Dave, but that's not who I am, because I could change my name. I'm going to be Stephanopoulos. So I'm no longer Dave. Okay. So I'm Stephanopoulos now. So, okay. I'm not Dave. Okay, I'm married. I have two kids. Okay, what happens if, God forbid, they all get in a car accident and they're no longer with us? Okay, I'm no longer a husband. I'm no longer a father, but I'm still here, right? It doesn't change who I am, so I'm not that. And so you see where I'm going. Like, there's these key things that arise when I think of who I am that I'm like, wait, that's not actually me. And then it gets really more tricky the more we dive into like, well, okay, I'm this body. I'm this mind, my brain is producing my experience, or so some think. Those are the kind of things that I'm really diving. And I know you are too, like we're really diving into those. Right. So that's what I'd love to just further riff on that. And some of your thoughts around that, the I that is so often referred to. And I love that. I'll say one thing and then I'll hear your thoughts on it. But I love that this is one of those things that I think when we start to learn it a little bit more and maybe take off those few pairs of glasses, we start to see in a different lens some of those things that are in the Bible.
Yes.
When Jesus says, before Abraham was, I am. Well, what? I mean, if you really look at that, it's like, that doesn't make any sense until you realize the power of this statement, I am. And then when God in the Old Testament, he says, the name is I am that I am. And that was it. I am that I am. really, yeah, I just wanted to I guess riff on that and in terms of the question of like, who am I and like, what does I am mean? What is the I behind that?
Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was first sort of introduced to the concept by reading the book Waking Up by Sam Harris. So it's Waking Up, Spirituality for the Non-Religious, I think. And
Guide
Sam
to
Harris,
Spirituality Without Religion. Yeah. Really good. I read it too. Yep.
Yeah. And Sam Harris is a pretty well-known atheist neurophysicist, but he had also been dabbling in, well, not dabbling, I guess. I mean, he'd been full on into meditation and had some sort of psychedelic mushroom experience of some sort that opened his mind up to all these different things. So he started following these gurus and looking into meditation, but also having the science background of understanding how the brain works. Mm. And he goes into all of this in that book, Waking Up. But there were a couple of things that stuck with me. One, he said, science can't explain how we each have the sense of what it means or what it is to be us. They can't explain from a scientific point of view how I have a very strong individual sense of what it is to be me. They can talk about the different parts of your brain that light up. They, you know, when something happens, they can tell you how the neurons work and how they fire, but they can't figure out how you can have this sense of being you. It's like if you and I were to switch brains, you could have my memories, you could have my experiences, but people would still be like, you're not Karen. Like, you get to play the role of me, but they can't translate that essence. That essence that makes us who we are cannot be translated, and it's not understood from a scientific point of view. And he made the statement along the lines of that they cannot explain consciousness, which they define as the sense of what it means to be you. That was my first foray into this whole area of consciousness and what that means to, like, for that to explain that sense of I, like, behind the I am. I am this. And I'll have to say too that, well, no, let me stop there. So you read The Waking Up as well.
Yeah.
The Sam Harris book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And yeah, a couple of things that I'm recalling now too is, and I'm probably going to butcher the actual science of it. So for anyone curious, I highly recommend reading the book or even just, you know, subscribing to Sam's content. It's called the Waking Up app. It's really good. There's a free version. There's paid versions, but it's a meditation app, but there's also a lot of good content in there where he dives into some of the theory and philosophy. But the couple of things that really stuck out to me and have stuck with me for a long time now, probably about a year since I read it. Yeah. But first was when he was talking about the brain and different parts of the brain. And let me step back. One of the things that's really easy when we're talking about this, like, who is our base essence? Who, when we really mm-hmm. boil it all down, take off all the sunglasses, who are we? It's really easy to say, well, we're our brain, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty easy, but is it true? Right. And that is where he boiled it down to what I found to be quite helpful from an empirical scientific basis. He says, there's different parts of your brain. We're all kind of in a place of multiple personality disorder.
Yes.
Where different parts of your brain are active at different times and they're not together, right? They are mm-hmm. separate. So then mm-hmm. it's like, well, which part of that am I? Right.
Right.
Who is the yes. I? And so that was really destabilizing for my own like pursuit of who I am. And then he said something that really resonated with me more experientially. So I had been going through some kind of, I guess, personal insight revelations on this stuff that kind of is hard to explain. So I won't go into it too much because I don't want to like derail our conversation or people listening. But I had this like strong intuition about like the dreamlike nature of reality, that our experience is some sort of dream, or to use other terms that people use is illusion, right? Mm-hmm. That it is all an appearance that we are experiencing, but it is not what it appears to be. The fundamental nature of reality is not what it appears to be. It's illusory. And something that Sam said that stuck out to me and has resonated ever since was the only thing we can know in this world that is not an illusion is consciousness.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And on that note, one of the things too that is so interesting is that everything that is, well, at least humans, I guess maybe we can't speak for animals, but every person on this planet has a sense of what it is to be themselves. And so that to me is also really interesting because it points out to the universe, the universality, not the right word to say, the universality of consciousness, that we are all collectively having this experience, but we're living it out through very different bodies and minds. But we all are having a sense of what it is to be that particular body, mind, essence in the world. And, you know, and then, you know, then we can even go deeper. I was like, well, if I'm having the same sense of what it is to be me and you're having a sense of what it is to be you, then is the experience that we're having, like, are we experiencing the same thing? Right. And then it goes, then you get pulled back even deeper into, well, am I part of this collective consciousness? And then you can go on beyond that.
Or am I that collective consciousness?
Yes. Or am I that collective consciousness? Yes.
I just had a thought as you were saying that. This is why it's great to riff on this, because it's something I had. Obviously, we've talked about it a little bit before, not recorded, but I just had a thought based on something you just said that it's not really ever occurred to me. What if this is based on something that Rupert Spira, a great spiritual teacher that both Karen and I really appreciate his facilitation, I guess he prefers that word, but he gave the instruction trying to let go of all memory, of all language, and basically imagine you're an infant and then try to understand your experience. Anyway, reason I say that is because as I process what you're saying and I try to get in that mindset of like, all right, let me strip away what I know, what I think I know, what my memory tells me is true, even if it may not be true, but we all have our biases, right? What if I let all of that go? And then I really latch on to what you just said, that we all share that. We share what you're saying, this sense of knowing who we are, this sense of an identity, to go back to that word, this sense that we are an identity. What if we boiled it all down and we just latched on to that and we said, okay, well, that's the same for all of us. So why would we be different? Mm-hmm. Why would there be any sort of physical or metaphysical separation between us as individuals if the primordial essence, the fundamental essence of who we are, is the same?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say that and I want to go there is because another buzzword, you know, we used enlightenment earlier. Now I'm going to use the other big buzzword in these more esoteric spiritual traditions is non-duality, right? Mm-hmm. And non-duality says essentially that there is no separation, that kind of what you were saying, there's this one big experience. There's a lot of different ways that people will define it. So I guess I'm giving my definition, but there's one big experience that is not, there is no breakage in that experience. It's all just one thing continuously happening, unfolding, and that the one that is experiencing it is the same, that mm-hmm. we all share that base level of awareness, consciousness. And to go there and identify as that which is experiencing what is unfolding, it mm-hmm. can be a very powerful thing, but also very like hard to wrap our minds around, because it's something that really is kind of tricky for the mind to wrap around.
Mm-hmm. a couple of months ago, I had this picture come up at some point. I think I told you, I was, that we're all like ice cubes in a glass of water, and we're all slowly melting. Some of us are freaking out, like, oh my God, I'm melting. Like, I got to get together with other ice cubes this doesn't happen to me, because I'm dying here. And other people are like, but you're just water. Like, all you are is water. Like, you're just going back to what you've always been, but you just happen to be in a different form. And I feel like it's a little bit of that. Like, every once in a while, I will be out for a walk or something, and I'll have this sense of jello moving through jello, that I am made of the same stuff that the universe is made of, and that there is no separation, that we're the exact same thing in like a different form. It does at some point start to get to that place where you lose the ability to articulate the experience. But the thing that you said about the sense of separation that is interesting is, you know, going back to our evangelical roots, sin essentially means separation, that we were separated from God. It's funny because, again, like, once you get into some of this stuff, you can really start to see how, if you tweak the way that you read the Bible, there are some, it can be read through this lens, this consciousness lens, but that there really is no separation between us and this whole presence, God presence, whatever you want to call it, universal consciousness. There really is no separation, but somehow we came to believe that there is. And that's when we put God outside of ourselves, instead of recognizing that we are what that is. And that's like that stripping off of identities, that taking off of all of the lenses. At some point, you can get to this point of being like really depressed, because it's like, well, I guess I'm nothing. If I take off all the identities, I guess I am nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels really awful at first. And after a while, you're like, wow, I'm nothing. I have nothing to protect. I have no reputation that I have to fight against. I have no enemies. Wow, I'm really free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's that it is that like returning to what you've always been, and recognizing that there is no separation. All the separations that we imagine are illusions. Like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's entering a world of, well, a nature that is formless, timeless, and limitless.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I say formless, timeless, limitless, that sounds very out there, but the reality is we really, if we sit still and quiet enough for long enough, I don't really think we have any basis to say why our experience wouldn't be that, right? Why it wouldn't be
mm-hmm.
formless, limitless, and timeless. Because mm-hmm. in each moment, there isn't time. It's just this. It's just mm-hmm. this moment, this experience. And yet we experience time, but in the rawness of pure experience. And so, yeah, you know, when we really boil it down to the fact that we are awareness that is having an experience of a human. mm-hmm. I heard something said, I think consciousness or awareness is what we are, and human is what we do.
Oh yeah.
That was a pretty powerful one. Cause there is, I want to really point out what you were saying there. I think that's important, is there is this almost certain tendency to go to a stage of nihilism and just feeling like meaningless, that there's, what's the point of all this? You know, if I'm not anything, then why, you know, why would I even be here? And I think that the last piece there to be letting go of is purpose to a degree.
Yes. Oh, that's a hard one.
Yeah, it is hard. And that's something that's like, this is not rainbows and butterflies. And it's very esoteric. There's nothing that I'm just going to say like, oh, I'm absolutely certain that this is it, but that it's something I'm very drawn to. I know you're very drawn to and really wanting to continue to hash it out. But there's this confidence that I get in this school of boiling it down to my fundamental nature as the one that is having the experience, not the objects of experience, being my body, my mind, my personality, all, you know, my sight, my hearing, all that, like all very, very important to my experience, but it isn't the one that is having the experience. To me, that's, if I'm to answer the question of who am I, that's where I've reached, is I'm the one that's having the experience. And whatever that means, however that came into being, I don't really know, but it can be very defeating to go through the stage of like, oh, okay, well then what's the point, right? But then like once you get through the other side, it's where it's just this lightness. It's like, well, we're here to have an experience, you know, like that's great. You know, just have the experience and enjoy it and make the most of it. There's no requirements. There's no thou shalt do this or thou shalt do that. It's just a matter of you're here to have the experience. That's your nature, and just go with it, you know, moment by moment, just be with that experience.
So what you're saying, gosh, there's some really hard stuff about going into some of these ideas, because for one, we get to that place of nihilism of what's the point? Why am I here? Why don't I just die? And society tells us that that's a really awful place to be. Yet there was part of me where when I was in that space, my view on death totally changed. And I started seeing death, and even like, you know, Rupert Spira and Muji and Toll will go, you know, will go into all these places too, of seeing death as being the return home. It's going back to your most natural way of being. And I think, you know, I think I'm much more scared of like the pain that I might experience on the way to dying, but I no longer have that fear of death, of what's going to happen to me when I die. It's almost just like, well, why wouldn't I want to die? And so, but our society is so trained to look at that deep, dark depression and everything as being a really bad negative space. And I would never advocate for anyone to take their own life, or, you know, I would never want for anyone to be in that negative of a space. And that goes to my next point, is that once you get there, when you can lose your addiction to purpose, and when you can lose your addiction to finding meaning and creating meaning out of everything, it opens up the space of like, well, what now? And what I've been brought back to just recently is the fact that all animals play. Dolphins leap out of the water for no reason. You know, polar bears slide down icebergs for no reason. You know, pandas like scratch their back, you know, and play with different things for no reason. Everywhere that you look, animals play, nature plays, flowers bloom for no reason other that they are just there and that's what they do. And so I've been trying to lean into this place that I am not put here, whatever, to do something great, to save the world, to, you know, yada, 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 to, you know, to have this great purpose and meaning and whatever. It's to play. It's to have that experience, to find the thing that lights me up or that feels good, just like a, you know, just like a polar bear's like probably accidentally slides down an iceberg. And it's like, oh my God, that was like, that made me feel like good, or that was kind of exciting or interesting. And like, let's go do it again. And I think that once you like once you, even though as hard and as difficult it is to detach from that need to find meaning and purpose in life, there is a lot of freedom to get to that place and be like, I'm just here to be. I'm just here to have the experience of what it is to be a human. I'm just here to play. It's a very hard, very, very, very hard transition. But there's so much freedom and peace in that space.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason that we brought it to this question so early on in our discourse here. Because I'm going to quote Eckhart Tolle. I'm going to paraphrase Eckhart Tolle here in his book, Power of Now, which has been, for me, without a doubt, the most powerful transformative book I've read in my life. I've read it off and on for the last several years. I read it as a quite evangelical Christian and it made some sense to me, but I didn't quite get it. It's like every time I read it, I'm like, yep, oh, okay, I get it a little bit more. And something that he talked about is we all have an inner and an outer purpose. And the outer purpose is exactly all the identities and the forms and the sunglasses that we're talking about here. The large, large majority of people today and throughout all of history have been almost entirely consumed by their outer purpose. What is it that, why am I here? What am I doing? What am I going to do with my life? Kind of that kind of question. And Tolle says, then there's the inner purpose. And the inner purpose can be simply said, what we're talking about here, who am I? Realizing who you are. And really, so many of the sages and spiritual teachers, especially of more Eastern traditions, the more esoteric traditions, would agree on this, that realizing who you are fundamentally changes your external purpose. So realizing your inner purpose becomes what it's all about. And then the outer purpose becomes a game, right? It becomes a, I am here to enjoy this. What's the word for, you know, humanity seeking only pleasure?
Oh, like hedonism.
Hedonism, yeah. Not a hedonism, because a hedonism is deriving your joy and happiness from external things. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about deriving your joy and happiness from pure being, finding out who you are. And that's why a lot of people become monks and go live in caves, because they're like, well, I don't need any of this because I have abundance of joy within, without all of this stuff. But then once you reach that point of fully embracing your true nature, then the behaviors and experiences of life become just that. They're just part of your inner purpose unfolding in time and space, moment by moment by moment. And I think the reason to emphasize that is because there is such a, and Tolle talks about this as well, there is a lightness about it. There is a peace. There is a lack of worry. And suddenly the teachings of Jesus and other places in the Bible, frankly, where he says, why worry about tomorrow? No one ever added a day in their life by worrying about the future or something like that. You know, those things start to make more sense when we realize it through this lens.
Yeah, we might end up having to make this into like a two-part episode, because I feel like there's so much more to say. You know, one of the things that I do to help me tap into this a little bit more, like on a practical level. So One of the things that has been really helpful for me to recognize the mind body, that I am not my mind and I am not my body, is, you know, things like when you take a shower, try taking a shower and thinking about something else and then notice, oh my God, like I washed my hair. Who washed my hair? Because I certainly wasn't paying attention. I was off thinking about like the grocery list that I have for Thanksgiving. I didn't wash my hair. So who was that? Who was running the thoughts, telling my body what to do while like in order to wash my hair? Like whenever you drive somewhere, right? And your mind is 1,000 miles away thinking about your kids or, you know, worried about your job or a meeting that you have or a conversation that you just left. And then you make it home. Who drove you home? Because something was working there. And so for me, it's helpful just to recognize that there's a separation, right? That I am not my mind, because my mind was way off here. And yet these other things happened in order for my body to get home or to have a shower or whatever. And so sometimes I'll just be like cooking dinner and I'll think like, oh, look, there's Karen's body cooking dinner. Or, you know, meditation, whenever, you know, the yogis all say like, oh, meditate and watch your thoughts. What they're trying to invite you to do is to create that space to recognize that you are not your thoughts. While your thoughts are going by, like running all around, all over the place, there's someone watching. And so sometimes I'll even say like during meditation, I'll be like, wow, that's a lot of thoughts. Or, you know, people will say like, every time you have a thought, be like, that was a thought. That was a thought, you know. Or I know, in Michael Singer in his Untethered Soul book, he says, just even introduce the word hello as your thoughts are like, oh my God, I got to do this. Just say hello. And you realize you're not your thoughts. You're not your thoughts. You're not your body. What you were saying about the scripture thing, I feel like I finally understood why Jesus kept looking at the disciples and being like, do you guys still not get it? Mm-hmm. Because Jesus, when he was talking and he's saying things like, I am the way and the truth and the life, he is not speaking as the mind, body, human, physical form of the person that is called Jesus.
Right.
He is, or you could read it as that he is speaking as though he is this I am that was before Moses, this I am, you know. And if you're like, oh, he's saying that, he's like personifying that I am. So, and the disciples are like, wait, like you, like Jesus, like I'm supposed to follow you. It's like, oh my God, no, do you still not get it? Like, I am not the mind body that you think I am. The who am I question is so good to keep coming back to, because it's this constant recognizing and becoming aware. We are not what we think we are. And we are not what we've been told that we are. You know, like a lot of people are like, oh, I was told that I was worthless. I was told I was this. I was told that I was that. It's like, well, you don't have to accept that in the first place. And two, you are not any of that. You are this undefinable, indescribable essence that is way beyond just this physical mind body that we present to the world.
Yeah. It's almost like another pointer here, because I like what you mentioned, that here's some practical ideas to help realize these things. Is whenever you have thoughts arising like that, thoughts about yourself, because we have that all the time, let's face it. Like I'm a loser, or I suck. I'm so bad at this. Like I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Or maybe on the other side, pride, like, oh, I'm so good. Look at me. And then asking the question of like, well, who is noticing that? You know, it really, like really getting to like the, who's the one that's seeing that to be able to make that judgment. And it really destabilizes those thoughts to be like, whoa, wait, is that just a thought, or is that actually who I am? And yeah, because it can be really a helpful pointer.
So there was something that I was thinking about, you know, to try to help further solidify this for myself and for anyone who is listening, like I was thinking about the, you know, the analogies of music. Like one of my good like spiritual mentors, Robert Pelfrey, he used to say, he's a musician. And so he would say to me, music is proof that there's a God.
Mm.
And what he was meaning is that, you know, like what is music? Like whenever you hear a song, it might be words, you know, lyrics, it's the actual like music, like notes on a sheet. But if you just hand someone a piece of paper and you say, this is the song, the sheet of paper embodies the song, like those are the notes that you're supposed to play, but that's not the song. But then if you hand them the lyrics and you say, well, this is the song, well, those might be the words for the song. And I can read those words. And you'd be like, yeah, that's not the song. Like you have to do more than read the words. You have to do more than read the music. And when you put the words and the music together, even then you can play that and you might hear something and it's just like, okay. But then there's this element, this essence to the song that can make you cry
mm-hmm.
or that can make you feel joyful. And like, that's the music.
Mm-hmm.
That's the music, but it's not the music. And I think of that with like the same thing with us that, you know, I have a mind and I have a body. And if you just had my thoughts, that's still not really me. But if you just have my body, that's also still not really me. And even when you just, if you just put them together, that's closer, but it's still without the essence of me embodying all of that. For me, that was a helpful way to, again, think of it in terms of like, I am more than this mind and this body, even though that is what the world is seeing. There is something beyond that that is going on. And then it's our, you know, once you become aware of that, I feel like it sort of is our, you know, it's a journey. And what this podcast is all about, like to go deeper into figuring out what that is. Like, what is that essence that makes me me? What is that thing? And, you know, you and I have kind of gone to this place of some sort of consciousness or awareness, like for whatever that is. And I think some people would even call that God, though maybe not like the biblical evangelical God. But when you get down to it, that is what the essence is, that we're all that we all are, and at the same time is us. It's like all encompassing. It's like that ice cube in water, or yeah, I guess you get to like the inarticulable aspect of it, but that really going deep into what is that essence? Like, what is the thing about music that makes you cry when you happen to put something together? It's that is the kind of nature that I now see myself as. And that's why I don't want to be defined. I don't want to put labels on myself. I don't want to create a new identity, and I don't want to cling to something for safety and security. Like, I want to stand as emotionally vulnerable and pure as I possibly can. And I think that is a lifetime of working too. At the end, I want to be that person that is like, oh, Karen did this and she did that. But like, that doesn't describe what she was like. Like, oh, I wish you could have met her. I wish you would have been able to experience her. Like, that's what I want people to say, that I'm an experience. That's what we all are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, I think, we may need to further unpack some of the nuances of this question, who am I, that we didn't maybe get to this time. But I think we'll hang our hats there and further explore this and other fun topics next time.
Absolutely. And I hope if anyone has more things to say, that they will reach out to us and ask more questions or just start a conversation, because there is so much to this. And this is the part where the journey can really become fun.
Mm-hmm.
It really can be. It's hard to get to, but if you can get there, if you can get past the faith deconstruction, and if you will keep going, there is definitely a lot of room for delight and peace and freedom and joy in this space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This question.
Yeah. And we have some contact. We'll have some contact information in the show notes. So yeah, like Karen said, feel free to reach out to us. We're more than happy to have those conversations.
Cause we're just regular people.
Yep. That's right.
We're regular people.
We're regular people that have asked this question deep enough to be really excited about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Until next time.